Good afternoon. Welcome to today's Medicaid Innovation Accelerator Program webinar. The name of today's webinar is Estimating Changes in Medicaid Expenditures for Various Value-Based Payment Approaches, Oregon's Experience. My name is Scott Light. I'm a senior fellow at NORC at the University of Chicago, and I want to welcome all of our participants on today's webinar. We're excited to have you as a part of this exciting discussion this afternoon. Before we get started with the actual webinar, just a few logistics. Next slide, please. During the webinar, all lines will be muted. Please do not put your line on hold because oftentimes in doing so, it has hold music that comes up. Please use the chat box on your screen to ask questions or to leave a comment. We welcome comments and questions throughout the webinar. And then finally, just for your information, today's webinar will be audio recorded. Next slide, please. For learning objectives, by the end of the webinar, we're hopeful that that participants in the webinar will be able to learn about the Medicaid Innovation Accelerator Program, or IAP, as we'll frequently refer to the program throughout today's webinar, and Oregon's goals and objectives for developing the value-based payment estimation technical resource tool that they had and used throughout the course of this IAP opportunity. To learn how Oregon used the resource to inform its value-based payment strategic design considerations and how it will continue to be used by the state to help meet its long-term value-based payment goals. To understand the methodology for developing the resource, and to learn how your state can use this tool to examine changes in Medicaid expenditures for various value-based payment approaches. Next slide, please. So the agenda, we'll have introductions first. Secondly, we'll talk a little bit about what the Innovation Accelerator Program is and the technical support that's being provided underneath it, as well as Oregon's goals in taking up this technical support opportunity. We'll have a demonstration of the technical resource by Justin Timby from RAND, and then we'll pause at that point for some Q&A, and then we'll hear some of Oregon's experiences using the tool, and also pause for Q&A after that point. Next slide, please. Our presenters this afternoon, in addition to me, who will be moderating the discussion throughout today, will be Justin Timby, who is a senior health policy researcher at RAND, as well as Zachary Goldman, who is an economic policy advisor at the Oregon Health Authority. Next slide, please. Before moving into the meat of the presentation today, let's spend just a couple of minutes talking about what the Innovation Accelerator Program is, as well as Oregon's goals under this opportunity. Next slide. The Medicaid Innovation Accelerator Program, or IAP, is a commitment made by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services to build state capacity and support ongoing innovation in Medicaid through targeted technical support. The goal of IAP is to increase the number of states moving towards delivery system reform across their various programmatic priorities. And it's important to note that this is not a grant program, but rather a technical targeted support opportunity. Next slide, please. The Medicaid Innovation Accelerator Program really looks to tackle delivery system reform by focusing on four programmatic areas that are seen in the columns listed here: improving care for Medicaid beneficiaries with complex care needs and high costs, promoting community integration through long-term supports and services, supporting physical and mental health integration, and reducing substance use disorders. Those four programmatic areas are further supported by functional areas, which include support for states around data analytics, quality measurement, performance improvement, and value-based payment and financial simulations. The information provided today and the Oregon experience was really provided under that last bullet point, value-based payment and financial simulations. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Zachary from Oregon to talk a little bit about Oregon's interest and approach in looking at the Innovation Accelerator Program opportunity. Zachary, can I turn it to you?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Hi, everyone. Zachary Goldman here. So I wanted to orient folks on the three requests that we had of the team. The first one was some technical support in developing, one, a standardized set of definitions. You know, what do we mean by value-based payment? What's included, what's not? And secondly, we wanted some assistance creating a value-based payment roadmap, how we get from where we are today to where we want to be in 5 years. So that was a really important piece. The second request, though, was some support identifying what levers we had at our fingertips so that the state could encourage some uptake of value-based payment models in two particular areas. One is behavioral health providers, and secondly, how can we leverage value-based payments or at least think about value-based payments in the space of addressing social determinants of health, which is a really key priority area. Both behavioral health and social determinants of health are key priority areas of our governor, of the legislature, and of leadership here at the Oregon Health Authority. Thirdly, though, and most relevant to today's conversation, we wanted some support conducting some financial simulation analyses because we wanted to predict and empower our coordinated care organizations with some tools so they could predict the potential impact of value-based payments on both cost and quality axes. Throughout our work, we've always been looking at both quality and cost and trying to better understand how value-based payments can advance both of those goals. So with that, let's move to the next slide. I'll kick it back to Scott for a poll question.
Great. Thanks, Zachary. Our first poll question is, has your state used data to assess the potential impact of a value-based payment arrangement on outcomes of interest, such as Medicaid cost savings? And you see the options are yes, no, or unsure. We'll wait a moment while you all enter your answers. And I think we'll close the poll. And it looks like about half of you on the call have used data to assess the potential impact of value-based payments on outcomes for your programs. And some are unsure or an unknown commodity right now, but at least half has. So it's a knowledgeable audience that's already engaged in this activity. So we think the information here provided will be of great interest both to you and those of you who are thinking about it. So with that, I think we can turn to the next slide, and I'm going to turn it over at this point to Justin Timby from RAND for a demonstration of the tool they developed on behalf of the Innovation Accelerator Program for Oregon. Justin, can I turn it to you?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. So as was mentioned earlier, Oregon requested support for simulating the potential impact of introducing VBP approaches within its existing program of coordinated care organizations. And as part of the IAP technical assistance, we developed an Excel-based model that simulates changes in state payments under four different VBP approaches: pay for performance, patient-centered medical homes, accountable care organizations, and bundled payments. And so although we developed this resource for Oregon, and it has many features that are unique to the Oregon context, with some simple modifications, the resource can be adapted for use by other states. So like all of the financial simulation support provided to states under the IAP program, we followed a few basic steps for developing the resource. So first, the support team developed, reviewed, and finalized the analytic plan through an iterative process with the state. In parallel, as the analytic plan was being developed, we identified the data that were available and could be used for the analysis. And in our work with Oregon, this included financial data, including enrollment, payment, and aggregate expenditure data. And as part of the work, we conducted an evidence review to obtain the most up-to-date estimates of the impact on costs of different VBP approaches. So finally, we built a model. In this case, it was an Excel-based template to estimate changes in state payments under different VBP approaches. So as you'll see in a moment, the technical resource is an Excel workbook with a total of 9 tabs. The first 3 tabs are instructional in nature. They provide background information on the development of the resource, descriptions of each tab, and descriptions of each variable used in the calculations. The next 5 tabs show the key data inputs. Some of these data were provided by Oregon, such as CCO level enrollment, payment, and expenditure data. Other tabs contain data that we compiled and used to derive a few key parameters, like expenditure growth rates and evidence on the impact of VBP approaches on changes in expenditures. So we'll then spend some time walking through the final tab, the VBP estimation tab, so you can see how all these inputs come together to estimate changes in state payments. So without further ado, I will share, at least attempt to share my screen and begin the walkthrough. And I will say for accessing this technical resource, please email Kevin Koenig at NORC, and his email will appear soon in the chat box, and he'd be happy to send you the template. Okay. So if anyone's having trouble viewing the Excel file, there's 2 options to make the screen larger. So in the top right corner of the webinar screen, there's a small square icon, and you can make the webinar full screen by clicking on that square. That's in the top right corner of the screen. On the bottom right side of the screen, there's another small square icon that says actual size. You can click on that icon to zoom in and make the content larger. So the first tab that you'll see when opening the workbook is the background tab. It describes the purpose of the tool and the data that are needed, which we'll go through in detail. And it provides more details about the evidence review that we conducted. The next tab, DESC underscore tabs, is a table of contents that describes each of the 9 tabs in the workbook. And you can see the 9 tabs arrayed across the bottom of the screen. Column A contains the names of each tab followed by a description. And before I turn to the tabs that are colored, which we'll walk through individually, I want to mention the 3rd tab called DESC underscore variables, which is another informational tab. This is a reference for you. And as you can see from the description in row 4, this tab defines and describes all of the variables used to produce the estimates in the Estimates VBP tab, which is the orange color tab. And I won't go into all of those details, all the descriptions of the variables now, because I will discuss most of them when I walk through the Estimates VBP tab. So the next 3 tabs, 1 green and 2 yellows, contain the data inputs, the CCO level expenditure data, enrollment, and PMPM payment data, and data used to derive growth rates. And you can see that each of these 3 tabs, the green and the 2 yellows, has the prefix data in their names. The next 2 tabs are the blue tabs, and they contain information from our evidence review. We'll go through those as well. And the orange tab called Estimates VBP is one of the most important tabs in the workbook. As you'll see shortly, in this tab, there are several white cells in which the user selects values of several variables from drop-down menus for each row in the tab. There are also gray cells that contain the model outputs, including enrollment and payments in the projection year. So we'll now go through all the color tabs in more detail, but I think I'll just pause here and see if there are any questions that have come through the chat box.
Hi, Justin. This is Scott. One question is, How were the specific value-based payment models, whether it be patient-centered medical home or pay-for-performance or ACO or shared savings types models or even bundled or, you know, episode-based payment approaches listed in the background tab identified for use in the technical resource?
Okay, so we wanted to make sure that we covered the most prevalent types of VBP models that are in use today. So, you know, we also wanted to make sure that we had VBP approaches that spanned both ambulatory settings like PCMH, the medical homes, and also those that tended to focus more on hospital-based care. So we included bundle payments as well. So these four types of value-based payment models tend to be the most prevalent. And so that was our starting point.
Great, thank you. This is the only question that came in, but participants, feel free to send in questions as you have them along the way. I think otherwise, Justin, you can go ahead and proceed.
Okay, sounds good. So we'll turn to the first green tab, or the only green tab. And here for each CCO, we used aggregate data on expenditures within 9 service categories. So in column C, you can see that these categories range from hospital services to other. Column D contains total service expenditures for the service category. And when a user inputs expenditure data into the worksheet will calculate the percentage of total expenditures accounted for by each service category. And you can see that in column E. So, for example, if I replaced total physician expenditures for a CCO1 with $0, you'll see that the share of expenditures adjusts automatically to account for that relative share of spending on that service category. So these values in column E are what's used in subsequent calculations. So I will say here that all of the data in this tab and the next couple are fictitious. For the purposes of this walkthrough, we've replaced Oregon's data with completely fake data. Okay, so the next tab is the first yellow tab, and this contains enrollment counts and payment rates by beneficiary enrollment category for each CCO. So first in column C, you'll see something called CCO type. In Oregon, there are 5 different types of CCOs identified by letters, which reflect different types of services that the CCO is responsible for providing. So CCO A is the most comprehensive, and these CCOs provide physical health, mental health, non-emergency medical transportation, and dental services. Payment rates to each CCO will vary by the CCO type and by enrollment category. In Oregon, there are 12 enrollment categories, which you can see in column D. The number of member months by enrollment category for each CCO are reported in column E. And then finally, the payment rate per member per month for beneficiaries in each enrollment category for the relevant CCO type is reported in column F. Again, these enrollment and payment data, like the expenditure data on the prior tab, were provided to us by the state in the format that you see here. We've just changed the data for the purposes of the webinar. Okay, next tab is data growth. So this tab shows how 2 key parameters are derived. First, in columns B and C, we derive the average annual growth rate in enrollment in Oregon's Medicaid program. So the growth rate is derived by compiling enrollment counts for each year all the way back to 1991, which you can see in column B. We then calculated annual growth rates in enrollment for each year from 1991 to 2014, which you can see in column C. Now, finally, we calculated an average annual growth rate, and you can see from the orange shading in column C that we're averaging over the period 2000 to 2013 for this calculation. So the average annual growth rate in enrollment in Oregon Medicaid, 3.8%, is reported in row 28. and this value is used in subsequent calculations to project enrollment into the future. Using an identical approach, we derived the average annual growth rate in expenditures per enrollee, and that derivation is shown in columns D and E. As you can see in row 28, we use an average expenditure growth rate of 3.1% in our subsequent calculations. So the source of this information is the CMS state health expenditure accounts, and data from Oregon are shown in the worksheet, but data for each state are available at the link that you see on the screen. Okay, so the next tab is Sources VBP, and this tab contains the results of the evidence review that our team conducted. So for each article identified in the review, which is listed in column B, we indicate the VBP approach that was evaluated in the study, and that's in column C. So from each study, we abstracted estimates of changes in expenditures for specific services due to participation in each VBP approach. And so you can think of these as impact estimates. And where necessary, we converted these estimates to relative reductions in expenditures or percent changes in expenditures from baseline values. So these impact estimates are listed in column E. And in rows 4 and 8, further down the screen, you can see some blue rows, and those contain the median impact estimates across the studies that we reviewed for each combination of VBP approach and service type. And it's these medians that are used in the subsequent calculations. So, for example, just highlight a couple of rows here. And so so in this example, our estimate for the impact of a PCMH model on spending for physician services is 0%, which you can see here in row 8. And so that's we obtained that by virtue of that being the median value across the three studies that were included in this review. Okay, so that was our evidence review. And the next tab, Data VBP, is simply a synthesis and reorganization of the information in that prior tab. It shows just the median impact estimates for each combination of VBP approach and service type. It basically gets everything into a format that can be used by formulas in the other tabs. And I'm not going to spend much time, any more time, on this tab. So before we get to the last tab, again, the most important tab, I will pause and see if there are any more questions that came through the chat box.
Hi, Justin. This is Scott. The first question that's come in is, can the value-based payment or VBP evidence expenditure estimates be updated with data points from more current VBP studies?
Yeah, absolutely. So the evidence review that we conducted and we showed on the prior tab, I think is current through fall of 20, well, it happened, I guess, between fall 2017 and winter of 2018. So any study that was published in basically 2018 through the present is not reflected in these estimates. So a user of a tool could carry the evidence review forward from the end of 2017 to the current time and update those median impact estimates.
Great, thank you. Another question's come in. You sort of addressed this one, but maybe you can just describe it again. In the Sources VBP tab, you talk about median as being how what you're using for an estimate. Can you say a little bit more about kind of what you looked at there and what the meaning of median in the context of this particular model tool means?
Yeah, exactly. So you know, it's always a challenge sorting through the evidence and coming up with a single summary measure of impact, you know, across studies that, you know, obviously draw on different samples, different contexts, occurred at different times. And so, you know, our approach was to take simply the median across all different studies within a category, of VBP approach, to come up with a single estimate. You know, there's lots of different ways that could be done. We could have used the mean, a weighted mean, or any number of different approaches. But for simplicity, for this tool, we thought that the median was a sensible approach.
Great, thank you. Those are the questions that have come in to this point.
Okay, in that case, I will proceed to the final tab, which is Estimates VBP. So this is the tab, as I mentioned before, where the user selects a number of different options from drop-down menus and where all the calculations occur. So each row in this tab corresponds to an individual CCO, which you can see in the first column, which is column E here. As I mentioned previously, the white cells represent user inputs, and the gray cells beginning in column M contain formulas that perform all the necessary calculations. So among the white cells, we've already discussed CCO type and beneficiary enrollment category. There are a few inputs that we haven't discussed before. So the first is projection year in column H. That represents how far into the future you would like to project expenditures, currently set at 2020 for all CCOs. Next, the VBP approach is in column I, and so the user selects which of the four VBP approaches from this dropdown that each CCO will be implementing. So here you can see the four types that we have available in this technical resource. So I'm going to skip column J for a moment and then move to columns K and L, and you'll see these are the target service type 1 and target service type 2, and these are the types of services that each CCO might be prioritizing for improvement under the VBP approach. And there are only two options here, hospital services and physician and other professional services. And at least one of these has to be selected, but both can be selected, which is why we have two fields for target service type. So for each of these service types selected, operationally what the model does is to apply an expenditure reduction to that category of service and only that category using the median impact estimates from the literature. Scroll back to column J for a moment, the VBP effectiveness for population service. So in this drop-down menu, there are three choices. Based on the user's selection, a different multiplier is applied to the median VBP impact estimate. So average means that the median impact estimate from the literature is used. Below average means that the VBP approach is 25% less effective than the median for that population and service type. Above average means that the VBP approach is 25% more effective. And so we built this multiplier into the model to account for differences in the relative effectiveness of a VBP approach, because the impact of the payment model might depend on the complexity of the patient population. Okay, so moving on to the gray cells, the first calculation in this section occurs in columns P and Q, and it's the calculation of payment amounts in the projection year, so 2020, under the status quo. So this is the scenario in which VBP does not exist. So it's the status quo. In column P, we report payment amounts in PMPM, and in column Q, we report aggregate payments. And we calculate these by projecting forward the base year enrollment counts and the base year payment amounts using the growth rates that we derived on the tab data growth. So I'm going to hide these so that we can see the remainder of the columns. And then I will move on to the next four columns, which are R through U, in the center of the screen. So you don't, so these don't involve calculations per se, but they're populated with data from other tabs that are needed to calculate changes in expenditures. First, in column R, it's populated with each CCO's share of total expenditures associated with service type 1, so hospital services in this first row, this first example. Column S is populated with the expected percentage change in expenditures for service type 1. And this percentage reflects the VBP effectiveness multiplier, which in this example, the first row was above average. So in this example, again, the first row that, of data that we see here, the CCO is targeting both hospital and physician and professional services. So columns T and U are also populated and show similar information for physician and professional services. Finally, in the last four columns in orange, the worksheet calculates payments under each VBP approach, which we will compare to our status quo estimates. So in columns V and W, we have PMPM payment rates and aggregate payments, respectively, under the VBP approaches. In column X, we have the change in payments from the status quo due to VBP. And then finally, last column, column Y, is the change in payments expressed as a percentage. So again, for this first example of CCO1, and this VBP model here that we selected was PCMH. And so a PCMH model is expected to reduce the state's payments for TANF enrollees in 2020 by around $45,000, which is equivalent to less than 0.1% in lower payments. So as you can see with these last couple of calculations, what this workbook does is to first calculate an expected reduction in expenditures for each selected VBP approach. Those lower expenditures are translated directly into lower payments by the state. And then finally, the difference in payment amounts under the VBP approach relative to the status quo are calculated as a way to quantify the potential benefit to the state of each VBP approach. So with any Excel-based model, you can certainly change inputs and obtain updated estimates in real time. So for example, I will hide a couple more columns so as to not be distracting. For example, we can alter the projection year. In this simulation, it was 2020 for all CCOs, but this can be changed to 2025 or any other number, and you'll see that the orange columns will update. The VBP approach, obviously, this is a drop-down menu. This can be changed from PCMH to ACO. Again, those numbers, the change in payments for the ACO option are larger, so more savings to the state. That's a function of the impact of ACO relative to patient-centered medical home. And, you know, of course, we could also assume that an ACO model is less effective for a TANF enrollee population. Change that to below average, and you can see the savings to the state is slightly lower. So to wrap up, I'll just say that we view this workbook as a template, and we're often referring to it as a template, that states can, in conjunction with their data partners, can adapt in several ways to fit each state's unique context. And so, for example, rather than CCOs, the unit of analysis can be any provider or provider network, such as an ACO. The beneficiary enrollment categories can be changed as appropriate for each state. And as we mentioned earlier, the evidence review can be expanded, or if users want to simply input their own impact estimates and not rely on the literature at all, that's easy to do as well. So all of the formulas in the workbook are relatively straightforward, so analysts that have experience with Excel should be able to adapt the workbook fairly easily to fit each state's unique context. Okay, and with that, that concludes the walkthrough. I'll turn it back over to Scott.
Justin. Great. Thanks, Justin. And thanks for that really wonderful overview of this really wonderful flexible and practical tool that y'all developed. A couple questions have come in. The first relates to, I think, just how to think about column X, which is that change in payments from status quo to what the value-based payment is. Do these data points help Medicaid agencies determine or give them some guidance around which parameters lead to increases or decreases in their overall Medicaid spend rather?
Yes, that is the general idea. So looking at column X, the relative magnitudes of those changes in payments from the status quo, users can kind of work backwards to the various input values, the enrollment categories, the specific model, the relative effectiveness parameter, and can see to what extent those selections are driving those differences. You know, with the example that I showed with the eight rows, we sort of were toggling different models across all the CCOs, different enrollment categories, and different levels of relative effectiveness. So it's hard to isolate the drivers in that kind of an approach. But certainly, a lot of those inputs can be homogenized. For example, a user can select ACO across every unit, every CCO in this example, and see how that one factor is driving the change in payments.
Great, thank you. One additional question, and then we'll pivot over to Zachary to talk about Oregon's use of the model. But I'm curious, based on building this resource that you've done in the programming and the specifications, any thoughts on overall guidance on how other states should approach starting to use this resource, this particular resource for their own states?
Yeah, so I think, the first couple of steps would be to, decide which VBP approach is the focus. And, most states will want to focus on just a single VBP approach rather than the four that we offer in the tool, simultaneously. Once that VBP approach is identified, perhaps updating the literature review for that one approach to make sure it's as current as it can be. And then, identifying the units of analysis would be really the next step, whether it's an ACO or a practice or a hospital, because all the data inputs, the expenditures, the enrollment, payments have to be at that level of analysis. I guess the other thing is that, this model was built to estimate impacts of VBP for specific enrollment categories, but states need not do that. They could roll up their enrollment categories to larger groups or simply look at all enrollees together across all categories. And then sort of, then massaging the data into the format that's needed for the tool would be sort of the final step so that it can be inserted directly into the tabs that we went through.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. As we pivot now to turn over to Zachary Goldman, who you heard a little bit from earlier, very briefly from the Oregon Health Authority, to talk about Oregon's experiences using the resource. Just want to remind folks that we will have another Q&A after Zachary's presentation. So if you have questions, either on Zachary's presentation or on Justin's, please feel free to send those in and we'll get to as many as we can. With that, Zachary, can I turn it to you?
Sure, yeah. So in the next slide, what I'd like to do is tell folks a little bit about our strategy and what we had hoped to get out of this model, which we did, and then how we used it. So first, just to level set for a moment, we sought a model that was incredibly dynamic, that met the needs of our diverse state. We have urban areas, we have rural areas, we have frontier areas, and they each have their own experiences with regards to the different models of value-based payments they could consider, and other factors. So we needed this model to be dynamic to examine those specific impacts of the different approaches. Secondly, we needed it to be very flexible and usable. So the use case had to be clear. And the reason it's in Excel, I think, is to achieve that. If it were based in some statistical software that only a handful of folks have, then that wouldn't really meet the needs. So the fact that it's really easy to use and accessible was key, and a resource for both the Oregon Health Authority and the coordinated care organizations themselves, which, if folks aren't familiar with our approach, our CCOs are our Medicaid managed care organizations. Thirdly, on this slide, the data collected and the different evidence collected in itself was incredibly helpful. So that sources underscore VVP tab, even if you don't use the model, as it were, I would highly encourage you at least look at the sources underscore VVP tab, because essentially that's a summary of all the diverse and really interesting research that's out there on value-based payments. So the evidence that's collected for this resource is of value and a really good resource for folks. Next slide, please. Great. So what we're hoping is that this new resource will allow the incoming class of CCOs, what we're calling CCO 2.0, this starts in January 2020. We're hoping that this allows them to kind of simulate their own impacts of the value-based payment approaches that they may take, and what works for their population, what works for their networks, which models might be more preferable than another. So I think this is helpful in both the current CCOs of today, as well as the CCOs, the next class of CCOs starting in just half a year. We also kind of referenced this tool as we thought about the value-based payment targets that we've established in CCO 2.0. And I won't go too far into detail, but essentially the Oregon Health Authority has required coordinated care organizations to invest in value-based payments, and that percentage of value-based payments increase over time. So this dovetails really nicely with the predictive capacity of this resource. Secondly, here, this resource is flexible, as I mentioned before, and can really be modified in a number of ways. And that's important as the Medicaid program evolves and over the coming years. In terms of a couple of lessons learned as we think back and look back at our experience, it would have been better to include the users of the resource a little earlier in the development of this tool. There were some complicating factors in that the Oregon Health Authority was in the process of developing the CCO 2.0 policies and requirements, and so our engagement with potential applicants to become a CCO was limited because of that work. So there was nothing we could do about it, but just looking back and just generally, it's great to involve the users of the resource in the development of the tool itself. And then lastly, it would have been great to adjust the timing of value-based payment guidance such that this tool could have been delivered with other informational and kind of background context for what are value-based payments, what is their general potential, how might a CCO go about launching a value-based payment, et cetera. So just kind of additional context and background would have been good looking back. But other than that, it's great to have the tool. It's incredibly flexible and dynamic and checks off all the boxes that we were hoping for. Next slide, please. So I'd like to open it up and see if anyone has any questions for us in Oregon.
Thanks, Zachary. A couple questions that have come in. One relates to from the way the question was phrased, that the information Oregon provided to, and this was information Oregon provided to RAND to sort of help build the model. It was based in had a base year. Does Oregon have any plans to sort of update that to more recent data, or sort of on an ongoing basis? Do you have you given that any thought, or do you have any plans to do that?
We're not there yet, but we are definitely considering that. The data that drive some of these values, as Justin mentioned, in Oregon are publicly available. That's part of our rate development and our capitation rate development work that we do and the reports that we publish. So going forward, given that we do have some new coordinated care organizations serving in new areas starting in January 2020, we very well could update it with the new data.
That's helpful to know. So if I heard you correctly, the data that you were using that was feeding into this was largely data that was already being developed for your capitation rate setting purposes. Did I hear that correctly?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And then do you have any feedback, from what you've heard from folks who've worked with the data or CCOs that have worked with the tool or know of the resource? Any feedback that you've received about the tool? Is it easy to work with? Has it been understandable for folks as you've gone about the process of kind of rolling it out both to the staff who'd be working with it as well as the broader stakeholder community?
Yeah, I think it's been pretty clear. We had some questions about kind of how some of the formulae are structured, but because it's in Excel and there's really no mystery, all the formulae are there. You just have to click on it and look at the different tabs it's referencing. I think it's fairly clear, and it's fairly intuitive to those with an Excel background and those familiar with Excel formulas.
That's great to hear. You're kind of the leading edge of looking at this type of a tool and having it developed and working with it. And I'm curious if you touched on this a little bit, I think, on your lessons learned, but I'm wondering if you'd be willing to expand a little bit on what advice you might have for other states or for stakeholders who might be interested in kind of pitching to the state that they should maybe look at this sort of a tool. Either in the approach of how the data is worked with or thinking about maybe working with leadership within a Medicaid agency or a health authority, kind of any advice that you have on any of those points, anything that you'd have to add there?
Sure, yeah. I think what has worked well in Oregon is our diverse engagement with not just the coordinated care organizations or in other states, the Medicaid managed care entities, but the provider community as well, whether that be hospitals or the Independent Physicians Association groups or the other medical groups. I think that's been a success for us thus far to figure out which value-based payments are already in the market, whether it be Medicare or on the commercial side. So what work can be leveraged by Medicaid policies to advance the goal of value-based payments? And what are the roadblocks in the community between payers and providers, et cetera? So it's only through engaging those diverse stakeholders can you begin to understand what the market looks like. So I think that's worked well for us thus far, and I think that's worked well for us as we develop the CCO 2.0 policies and requirements that will start fairly shortly.
Super. Those are great pieces of advice and great takeaways. Thank you. I don't believe there's any further questions that have come in at this point. So, Zachary, thank you for your presentation.
Thanks.
And we can move to the next slide. So, a great set of presentations today from both Justin at RAND and Zachary at from Oregon. Some of the key takeaways from today is that the resource developed for Oregon used aggregate data from the CCOs in Oregon, and value-based payment evidence estimates from the literature to forecast changes in state payments following the implementation of particular value-based payment approaches. And Justin walked through those, that range of approaches for you. The resource, as Zachary just described, was used by Oregon to examine the potential impact of various value-based payment approaches on cost and quality, and hopefully will help the CCOs meet their 2024 value-based payment targets. A key takeaway here is that other states can modify the design and resource, design of the resource, rather, and incorporate their own data. And as we heard, this is data that frequently, hopefully, is already in development from other purposes within the state Medicaid programs to help better understand the potential impact of value-based payment approaches on Medicaid expenditures. Next slide, please. So we want to wrap up by thanking everyone for joining today's webinar. It was a really excellent discussion and presentation on this tool that's been developed. Hopefully other states will find it of interest. We do hope to see you for the following upcoming Medicaid IEP value-based payment webinars, one on August 27th, which relates to insights and key considerations for implementing value-based payments in children's oral health, and then one on September 5th, key lessons learned in transitioning to value-based payment to improve maternal and infant health outcomes. We do ask that you please take a moment to complete a short feedback survey. Otherwise, this will conclude today's webinar. Thank you all.
And that does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.